We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Football Vision podcast. I'm your host, Phil Costa, and unsurprisingly, all eyes have been on the Champions League this week with four European giants facing off against each other. But we're of the view that all leagues deserve love, and we'll be hoping to divert your attention from the Champions League to the Championship. So with that in mind, make sure you've got us into your weekly routines as there are some great guests and episodes planned as we head towards the business end of this season. Thanks again for being here, and enjoy the show. For this week's episode, we've got journalist Joe Donoghue in the hot seat, who you can find covering Leeds United for the Yorkshire Evening Post, in addition to further writing and podcast hosting at Scouted Football. Joe, welcome to the show. How's it going?
Thank you very much, Phil. Delighted to be on. I was just saying, I listened to the first Football Vision episode, and I was like, yeah, this feels like one I'm going to add to my weekly rotation. But yeah, looking forward to chatting about the weird and wonderful that is the Championship.
Well, thank you. Your money will be in the post after that. And it's nice, actually, because we've worked together for a while now for Scouted Football. Obviously, I think it must be approaching 7 or 8 years. And it's been quite amazing to see us kind of start as teenagers with just passions in football, really. And we've both managed to make careers out of this. We're proper journalists now. And it's really great to have you here, and having immersed yourself in the Championship this season, I'm sure you'll be able to give us lots of insight that we maybe wouldn't be privy to normally. I think it's quite clear that I watch a lot of football, you watch a lot of football, you know, Premier League, European, South American. We've both invested a lot of time into youth tournaments as well. But I often say that the Championship, especially at this time of the season, can provide entertainment that no other league can. I'm not sure what happens, but it's like everybody's on mushrooms. There's ridiculous title races, relegation battles that go down to the wire. You've got the playoffs, which is almost like no rules football. Anything goes in those games, which just, you know, it's great entertainment. And more importantly, there's Jeopardy involved, which always elevates sport to new heights. What makes the Championship such an entertaining league, and why does it always seem to hit new levels at this point of the season?
I think you hit the nail on the head there with the Jeopardy comments, because there is so much riding on so many of these games. You know, the playoff final has been described as the richest game in football for, you know, nigh on 15 years. And the sums of money that have been, you know, circulating in the Premier League has only increased since then. So, I mean, it really is the be all and end all. And you can see the clamoring, the greed, the hunger to go up when there are, you know, three teams who are trying to go up in two automatic promotion places. Because, I mean, I'm no mathematician, but yeah, three doesn't go into two. So it does make for some really, really interesting matchups. And, you know, you look at the playoff finals in recent years, very, very cagey affairs, a lot of them going to penalties and extra time a lot of the time, because nobody wants to give that little inch. Nobody wants to give any wiggle room for someone to exploit. And, you know, these are teams that a lot of them do actually come up. I mean, I know this season has been an anomaly in that, you know, the bottom three are the three teams that went up last season, but there are a lot of teams that come up and do really well in their first Premier League season. So, you know, you do have these teams that are in the second tier in the Championship who have the capability to go toe-to-toe against some of the Premier League's best. But I think to sum up the Championship, it is the best league in the world unless you're trying to stay out of it or unless you're trying to get out of it. It is just the best, the most entertaining.
I think that's really perfectly summarized, actually. And you yourself, you're following one of the teams who are battling for automatic promotion in Leeds United. What has that experience been like covering them up and down the country? And how do you keep a clear head throughout those mad moments to get coherent words on the page?
It's difficult at times because, you know, you do find yourself getting carried away at periods. But, you know, it's important, I think, to just remember that, you know, you're there to report on the facts of the matter, you know, what's happening in front of you, not to let your judgment be shrouded or clouded by, I don't know, subjective opinion. But I mean, to be around it is incredible. You know, to see when Leeds don't win, to see the meltdowns, and when they do win, to see the euphoria and the celebration. And I mean, they were on a fantastic run at the beginning of this year. They won 12 out of their first 13 games in the Championship in 2024, and to sort of see them gradually chip away at the lead that Leicester had at the top of the table was really, really something to behold. It feels like you're witnessing something special. And ultimately, over the next couple of games, we will see whether that's, you know, Ipswich, who've done fantastically well this season. You know, when you think of the top four in Leicester, Ipswich, Leeds and Southampton, basically just pulling away from the rest of the division. And you consider that Ipswich were in League One last season. They didn't even win League One. They came second. And the work that Kieran McKenna has done with essentially the same squad, at least at the start of the campaign. I know that now they've reinforced with a scouted favourite in Ali Alhamadi and then Kiefer Moore as well. But, you know, the work that they've done there, that's one of the fantastic stories of the Championship, that, yes, there are teams with parachute payments, with Premier League squads, Premier League wage bills, but a team that has been marooned in League One for a number of years can actually come and really upset the apple cart. That's what makes it fantastic, and it just adds another element to it, because fans are unwilling to accept that, you know, this team that were nowhere near, you know, the likes of Leeds, Leicester and Southampton last season could ultimately end up pipping them at the post this year.
It's quite incredible, like you said, and this is undoubtedly the juicy part of the podcast, the automatic promotion race. I feel like there's twists and turns in this race with each passing week. You know, you mentioned Leicester there. They look to be the runaway leaders and pretty much sure bets for automatic promotion under Enzo Maresca, after spending 29 straight weeks at the top. I mean, they were even 11 points clear in February. But the wheels have come off slightly over the past 6 weeks and they lost again to Millwall last night. What's happened there? I know they're still top with a game in hand over Leeds, and you would expect their Premier League level talent and wage bill to see them through. But with PSR concerns hanging over them, they need that to be the case. They need this promotion.
Oh yeah, absolutely they do. I mean, all of the teams in that top four, you know, you see it all the time with the Premier League teams that come down when their accounts are released the following season. You know, the losses that they make in coming down to the Championship are, you know, in the tens of millions, and that's if they're lucky. They really, really desperately do need this promotion because of, as you mentioned, the PSR implications, you know, the possibility that they might even start next season with a points deduction due to breaches. But in terms of how the collapse has come about, and again, I've been using the term collapse, but they're still on 88 points after 41 matches, which is over a 2 point per game average. You know, they started the season in blistering form, them and Ipswich, didn't really relinquish their grip on the top until around the end of February, so to speak. And that was when they started to have their first wobble. You know, in every other Championship season, you'd see teams that ultimately go on to win the league and get automatically promoted, you know, having a two or three or four game stretch where they're maybe not at it. But this season, because it's been so abnormal, the length and the longevity of the winning runs, when a team like Leicester has maybe hit a little bump in the road, which they appear to have done at the wrong time of the season, it's blown up to be, you know, something which is even more catastrophic. And I still think they're having a fantastic season, as you'd expect, with the resources at their disposal. But I mean, it is quite something to watch, because, you know, you were saying, what, February they were 11 points ahead. I think at Christmas they were 17 points clear of third place. And now that gap is 1 point, is quite remarkable. But I think more or less speaks to the collective quality of the title race this season, is that there's not just one runaway team. There are three runaway teams and a fourth, which is still kind of in the hunt, even though we're, you know, three, four, five games from the end of the season. It's what I was saying. It's the one of the most entertaining, you know, leagues in the world because of the quality on show and also the jeopardy that there is, because you can't tell me that if this was, you know, another second tier, that just because, you know, the money involved in the Premier League, that can't be playing on the minds of those people who are decision makers at Leicester, decision makers at Ipswich, you know, that behind the net curtains of Premier League, of professional football clubs, those conversations simply do take place. We need to go up because X, Y, and Z financial reasons. So it'll be fascinating to see how it plays out in the last four or five.
I don't think many people would have expected Ipswich to be here, but with five games to go, they are third now and firmly in the race. They almost feel like the league's great entertainers. You know, they've scored more goals than anybody in the division. They're winning games in dramatic late fashion. And you mentioned him before, Kieran McKenna has done an incredible job at Portman Road, coming in from Manchester United, where he was the under-18s manager. And to come into his first senior managerial job and taking the club from mid-table in League One to Premier League hopefuls in just over two seasons, it's incredible. Just give us a bit of background on the story there and any players who have stood out to you.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, last season, while Leeds were still in the Premier League and Ipswich were still in League One, I didn't really pay that much attention to them. I sort of from afar, when I was doing my, you know, pre-season predictions this last summer, looked at how Ipswich had played and thought, actually, you know what, I think they could be an outside bet for the playoffs. Not in a million years did I think they'd be keeping pace with, you know, the three relegated Premier League teams with their budgets or comparative budgets. But McKenna is a really, really interesting coach. He's somebody who makes very, very good substitutions and early substitutions as well, which I know that fans of other teams are sort of clamoring for their coaches to do. Ipswich have scored the most goals using substitute players this season. And their home record is absolutely phenomenal. I think it's only bettered by Leeds in the Championship this year, but it's still, you know, one of the best home records in the last 10 years of the Championship, or it will be by the end of the season. And that was carrying on from last year. I think it was halfway through this season, they'd won 26 of their last 30 games at Portman Road, which was just an absolutely staggering statistic. And you know, to have that consistency. But I saw something recently which compared two of Ipswich's lineups, one from exactly a year ago, and, you know, from a recent fixture. And basically, the only player in the starting lineup that had changed was the goalkeeper. I think it was Christian Walton in League One, and they've got Vaclav Hladký this season. But the key players for them, you know, Sam Morsi in midfield and Massimo Longo, you know, two journeyman Championship and League One players who have, you know, really, I don't know, they've had a handle on the middle of the park for Ipswich all season. Leif Davis is probably the standout at left back, ironically sold by Leeds a couple of seasons ago, about 3 years. To Ipswich. I think he got 14 or 15 assists in League One last season, and he's on similar numbers this year in the Championship. Just such a dynamic player. He's got great speed, can can defend just as well as he can go at going forward. And he's got a great whipped cross on him. And it just, it works. It's one of these classic examples of a team that doesn't really have any superstars, but they, as a unit, as a collective, they are really, really difficult to stop. They know each other's games inside out. And, you know, that's a credit to McKenna for building a team that is capable of challenging for promotion to the Premier League, using players who have been discarded by other clubs and simply have just played their entire careers at, you know, second and third tier levels.
And Leeds, you know, they're the last of the three we haven't spoken about yet. They won just three of their opening nine games this season, and it was looking a bit underwhelming, if that's the word. They'd gone big on a few players. They'd just been relegated, so they'd lost a few players. Victor Orta was out of the club. There was a lot of change happening, a lot of transition, and with that start, people were maybe starting to feel a bit frustrated or grumbling a bit that they weren't challenging straight away. But things have turned around very quickly. Just give me the lowdown on Leeds under Daniel Farke and how they've managed to propel themselves to this position in the table.
Yeah, I mean, you're right to say, I mean, three wins from the first nine was not expected. But then again, you know, the turmoil and the turbulence, rather, over the summer was, what squad will Daniel Farke have on the 1st of September when the transfer window closes? Because pretty much half of the team left. A lot of them left on loan deals, which were sort of included in their existing contracts. That if Leeds were relegated, they were, you know, entitled to seek a loan move elsewhere. So you had the likes of Brendan Aaronson, Mark Rocker, Rasmus Christensen, Max Verba, Robin Koch, all of these players deciding that the championship wasn't for them, which is fair enough. I don't think that Leeds anticipated all of them doing it en masse. You know, Jack Harrison as well, he'd only signed a new contract in the April of last year. But it came to light that they had included one of these clauses, which again allowed him to join Everton. And because of the sheer number of these clauses, it meant that, you know, there was a standoff, essentially, that once Leeds had loaned out seven players to international clubs, which is the FIFA limit, there were players within the squad who wanted to leave, and they wanted to leave on loan. There were clubs who were queuing up to take them, but they were foreign clubs and they couldn't, you know, within FIFA's limits, they couldn't let them leave on loan to a foreign club. So it came down to, you know, well, Luis Sinisterra was one of these players. He eventually went to Bournemouth on loan on deadline day, sort of had to submit a deal sheet really late on to get that one over the line, because he wanted to leave, started the season in the team, but ultimately then made it clear to Daniel Farke that he didn't want to play a part in this season. There was the same scenario with Willy Nyonto, although he didn't have a loan release clause. He just wanted to go in light of interest from Everton and a few Italian clubs. He submitted a formal transfer request on the evening of a game back in August, and then was sort of ostracized from the first team setup for a few weeks before, you know, coming back to Farke with his tail between his legs and saying, actually, you know what, I'm ready to fight for my place, and ultimately has worked his way back into the team, and you know, now is again an integral player. But there was no guarantee of who Farke would be able to rely on. And because of the fact that all of these players who were still on Leeds' books were out on loan, it meant that they didn't get fees from them leaving the club. So they couldn't then reinvest it wholesale. So they had to be very smart. They had to be very savvy with their business. And I think that they got their summer window bang on. Ethan Ampadu from Chelsea, Joe Roden on loan from Spurs, Glenn Kamara from Rangers, Ilya Gruev from Werder Bremen, Joel Pirou from Swansea. You know, at different points in the season, all of these players have had a really important part to play, and they've contributed enormously. And then you've got the likes of Jorginho Rutter and Crescencio Somerville, who were at the club last season, barely played, but this year are two of the contenders for Championship Player of the Season. You know, Rutter's got, I mean, 16 assists, or 15 of those from open play or something mad like that. He's been a joy to watch, an absolute ball of energy. Sometimes I don't know how he manages to keep possession under the attention of three or four players. And then Somerville's been involved in 25 goals, you know, 16 of his own accord, and then setting up eight or nine himself He's just somebody who you can't really stop when he gets into full flight. So it's been a story of, you know, they've kept chipping away. They've kept, well, I mean, I was going to say they've kept within reach of the top two, but at times they hadn't, or they weren't. And it's a credit to how Farke has managed the summer, how he's managed expectation over the course of the season, and just kept everyone on an even keel. He likes to use the phrase, you have to remain cool in the head and fire in the heart, which is a lovely little Farkism. It's got plenty of them. When a team is coming to Elland Road with who are maybe a bit more rudimentary, he likes to say that they're a team with a knife between their teeth, which is a nice sort of Rambo iconography there. But yeah, he deserves a lot of credit for making sure that, you know, Leeds could potentially finish on 99 points this season from what was a standing start.
It's incredible, really. I just love it, really. The championship, I think especially in Europe, it gets overlooked, but the drama and the tension that you get in these final weeks is just amazing. I'm going to be a bit cheeky here. If you had to put your hat on two teams going up, who would they be?
Honestly, it changes week to week, and that's not me being diplomatic at all. You know, last night we saw Leicester losing 1-0 to Millwall. Before that game, I would have said 9 times out of 10, Leicester. Now I'm not so sure, because I don't know. They are the team that has had the biggest wobble in them. I honestly think Ipswich, it's in their hands, and then it'll be a straight shootout between Leeds and Leicester. It's essentially a game of whoever doesn't blink first, because they're going to keep leapfrogging each other in the table because the points tallies are so close and the games aren't played at the same time, right up until the final day. So honestly, if you ask me the same question at 12 o'clock on May the 4th, I still wouldn't be able to give you a straight answer. But I think Ipswich, I think are the favourites at the moment.
So when Leeds fans need somewhere to come with their pitchforks, I'll send them your way then.
I think they might be a bit blunted by the time they get to me. But there are a few people ahead of me on the chopping block, let's say.
We haven't even given it much attention, but the relegation battle is just as ridiculous, with 5 points separating 9 teams at the bottom. You know, Rotherham are already down. They've had an awful season. They've only amassed 23 points, so they're gone. But between Birmingham in 23rd place and Swansea in 15th, there are 5 points separating those teams. What's happening there?
It's incredible. I mean, for much of the season, it looked as though there was maybe a bottom 5 or 6 that were sort of in trouble. Yeah, you'd say maybe Swansea, QPR, Millwall, who are 15th, 16th, 17th at the minute, are probably going to be fine. But then you factor in that QPR and Millwall have played a game more than Blackburn and Stoke beneath them and Birmingham beneath them. And the fact that a lot of them have similar goal difference tallies as well. It's another one where I think it'll be coming down to the final day to see who goes down. I very, very much doubt that 23rd or whoever goes down along with Rotherham next will be decided before the final day. But I mean, the teams that are in there, some massive clubs, you know, Blackburn, huge, huge club, you know, QPR very recently, a Premier League team, but have pulled themselves clear recently with Marty Cifuentes, who's by all accounts done a really good job there. Sheffield Wednesday looked dead and buried during the first half of the season. Danny Rohl has come in, former assistant to Hansi Flick with Germany. He's got them playing some decent football. They've, yeah, maybe hit a little bit of a blip recently, but again, last night came from 2 goals down against Norwich to draw level. You know, Birmingham have had a bit of turmoil this season. You know, they were 6th when they got rid of John Eustace at the start of the season, brought in Wayne Rooney. That really didn't go very well. Brought in Tony Mowbray. There was an instant reaction, but Tony Mowbray's had to step away due to health reasons. And now they've got interim charge. And yeah, Plymouth, there was, I can't remember the name of the chairman, but the Plymouth chairman did an interview this week on the reason why they sacked Ian Foster, and saying that the man that he hired wasn't the man that he saw around the club once he was actually appointed. And I mean, that's a bit of that's a bit of soapy melodrama, that that line alone. And they're in the mix for relegation. Huddersfield as well. There's a lot at stake. And, you know, you look at the clubs that have been relegated from the Championship in the past and gone down to League One, a lot of them do struggle to come back up straight away. So, you know, I think a lot of those teams are looking at the Championship trapdoor thinking, maybe we won't bounce back immediately, so let's try and make sure we absolutely stay this season. So, yeah, it's a crazy league, absolutely bonkers league. And to think that there's probably only about three or four teams, I'm looking at, you know, Cardiff, Bristol City, Sunderland and Watford, who with four or five games to go, really don't have anything to play for. In a 24 team division, that's absolutely incredible. But, you know, that's the, I don't know if you'd call it the magic of the Championship, but that's the scenario that's played out this year.
I really would recommend it to anyone who doesn't really follow with much attention or detail. The Championship, in my mind, is the best value for money in terms of entertainment you can get at this time of the season. So do keep your eyes out for that. Just going to pivot slightly onto some players. I think from a Premier League perspective, shopping in the Championship is becoming more prevalent, and even European clubs are starting to show an interest with them effectively being priced out, both in terms of transfer fees and wages from signing top flight talent. There have been some standout performers this season. I'll give you a couple of players who I've been impressed with and expect teams to be looking at this summer, and then you can give me a couple. Does that sound all right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm going to go first of all for Gabriel Sara at Norwich. I think Norwich have been a bit of a yo-yo club over the past decade, but their recruitment process is often quite imaginative, and I've really loved watching Sara. I think it's strange to see a Championship club signing players directly from Brazil, but they paid a fair price for him, around £10 million from Sao Paulo, and I'm sure they will recoup basically double that this summer. He usually plays in a midfield pivot, but is just as capable further forward with a beautiful left foot. And he looks so elegant and effortless, just breezing around the pitch. He loves to play in those tight spaces, bouncing 1-2s off people, spinning away from pressure, and has added lots of end product to his game too, with 11 goals and 5 assists. Has he been someone that stood out to you or you've enjoyed watching?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I can't say I've watched loads of Norwich this year, but the games that Leeds have played against Norwich, he has been the danger man. He's been somebody who, I think with the Championship, you get a lot of players who you look at and go, right, this is their level. You know, this is their ceiling. You know, they're going to be very good at this level for the rest of their careers. You get a handful every season where you think, actually, you know what, they can play at a higher level. Sara is one of those who, again, has been playing for a team who until recently weren't really in the promotion conversation. I mean, Norwich are probably going to end up finishing sixth in the Championship. They're probably going to go out in the playoffs to whoever finishes third in the playoff semifinals. Sara will most likely leave. He'll probably go to, I mean, he could go to any of Europe's top five leagues. I think the Premier League might be a little bit of a stretch right now, but, you know, the likes of, a La Liga, I think he'd tear it up there. You look at what the likes of Savio has done this season, you know, a complete novice. Sara would be somebody who I really, really back to do well there. Certainly would do well in France. And then, like, for example, you look at what players in previous seasons, just looking at last season alone, what they have gone on to do. You know, Chuba Akpom was the top scorer last season, went to Ajax. Again, a different season, different Ajax team and different circumstances. And that's a great signing, a great move. But, you know, he's shown that he's able to play at a European level. Victor Gyökeres obviously is now linked with Arsenal, one of the most sought after strikers in Europe. He got 21 goals and 10 assists for Coventry last season. You know, Nathan Teller would, you know, 17 goals, 5 assists for Burnley as they won the league last year. Now is going to become a Bundesliga champion with Bayer Leverkusen. You know, Illiman Ndiaye, near enough 25 goal contributions last term and is now playing for Marseille. The league, as you said just then, is, I think it can be underrated in terms of the quality and the the quality to transfer price ratio, I think if you can get a player that fits how you want to play at a higher level, the Championship's a really good breeding ground for that. But yeah, going back to the original point, Gabriel Sara is somebody who I would put in that category for certain, yeah.
I think you've said it really well. And for my second player, I'm going to go for Jadon Philogene from Hull, who was signed from Aston Villa last summer and looks a really interesting prospect. I mean, some may know the name after he scored a ridiculous Rabona goal against Rotherham earlier this year. He's quite a tall, leggy dribbler, but I just love his intention, his proactivity. He always looks to take defenders on, can play on both sides, and is one of those players where you never know what's coming next. I think Hull are an interesting team this year under new owner Ali Ilicalli, have I said that right? They have a good young manager in Liam Rossignol and are pushing youth with a youth-centric transfer policy, and Philogene has been the best of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've got a very, very close friend who's a Hull fan, and he says that, you know, they haven't really had a player like Philogene for a long time. You know, he's someone who, he's a bit of an eternal pessimist, which maybe being a Hull fan is par for the course, but he says that, you know, they are pretty much prepared to lose him because he is that good. Someone who is, as you say, you know, a leggy dribbler, somebody who has made it into the England under 21 setup, is very accomplished at this level already at the age of 22. And you could see potentially going on to something bigger and better. That's not to take anything away from Hull. I think they've been fantastic under Liam Rossignol this year, who's, again, a very good up-and-coming coach. But yeah, Philogene is one which maybe just a step below Gabriel Sara. And again, that's because he's a little bit younger, doesn't have the top level experience yet, but someone who has all of the building blocks to say that, you know, one day he could be an impactful, you know, top flight player somewhere. Yeah.
So go on then, hit me with your players. Who are your players and why? I mean, you're quite sport for choice from a Leeds perspective, actually. So I could understand the temptation, but hit me with a couple and then we'll break off for part two.
I'm actually not going to go with any of the Leeds players. I mean, I've discussed Jorginho and I've just discussed Somerville previously. So I think it would be a cop-out to go with either of them. I think one of them will, I mean, I think probably Somerville will win player of the season, but Morgan Whittaker for Plymouth is the one which I think is absolutely nailed on for a move this summer. 19 goals, 8 assists for a team who, yes, they've been attacking. Yes, they've been very good at home. But, you know, as I was saying earlier, they're 20th. They are in a relegation battle. So for someone to be putting up those numbers, not from a centre-forward position either, you know, he's typically played out wide on the right wing. It's very easy to see why there were a number of Italian clubs that were looking at him in January just past. And I think he's someone who has the capability to step up to a top flight league next season. You know, he's again, like Philogene, but sort of on the opposite wing. Very, very leggy, very very accomplished when it comes to ball striking. And he's got a few seasons in the EFL under his belt now. You know, started out with Derby. Again, wasn't putting up the sorts of numbers that he has this season. But again, it's all about getting that familiarity, getting those minutes in the tank as a young player. Went to Swansea, did reasonably well at Swansea, went on loan to Lincoln, which has been a familiar hotbed for young talent. You know, Morgan Rogers was there. Can't remember who else was there at the same time as Morgan Rogers at Lincoln. But basically, that has been somewhere which has allowed young players to develop. You know, then got a move to Plymouth. And he's been their best player this season. So I think he's somebody who I can see moving on, maybe in the mould of, you know, Achiuba Akpom, for example, and going to somewhere in Europe next season. And I tell you what else, I've really liked Nathan Broadhead at Ipswich, someone who has not been a household name by any stretch of the imagination, but again, like Whittaker, has come up the hard way, came through Everton's academy, had a loan spell at Burton Albion, was with Sunderland in League One, scored a decent amount there. But again, isn't an out-and-out number nine. He sort of plays a little bit deeper than the centre-forward. Has played with Ipswich in League One. He's played with Wigan in League One. And this year in the Championship has been a really integral part of what has made Ipswich so hard to beat, because they just will always score more than you. And Broadhead has been a big factor in that. And at 26, you know, if Ipswich don't go up, I think there'll be teams that are sniffing around him, because he's such a... I mean, are we allowed to swear? I mean, it's only a light swear word.
Yeah, go.
It depends. He strikes me as a bit of a bastard sort of player. Mm-hmm. Like, he's always got those niggly challenges, and, you know, he's good at just getting into spaces where, you know, it's hard to pick him up. And, you know, he's got 13 goals this season, a great return for a player who's ostensibly playing his first full Championship campaign. So, yeah, he's got a bit about him as well. And I mean, there's loads. I mean, Ellis Sims having a great season with Coventry, an absolute handful centre forward. You know, Dewsbury Hall, 12 goals, 13 assists or something like that for Leicester. You know, Abdul Fatawu has been great for them. Steffi Mavididi, ex-Arsenal boy, he's been very good for them as well. You know, the list goes on. But again, it just comes back to the point that we were making, that it is a hotbed for talent. And if you can identify it and bring it to somewhere that you can enhance it and develop it, it's a great league.
Well, there you go. Scouts, directors of football, I hope you're listening. But that's all for part one. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back shortly with part two.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back to part two of the show. And I thought with the Euros coming up this summer, this would be an interesting topic to tackle. When it comes to players who are involved in the current England setup or those on the fringes pushing for inclusions, we overlook how much of an influence the Championship and EFL in general has had on their careers. I mean, there will always be elite prospects like Bukayo Saka, Phil Foden, and more recently, Cole Palmer, who are ready for first-team football straight away without the need for regular minutes elsewhere. I think Raheem Sterling falls into that category, Marcus Rashford as well, even Kobbie Mainoo, who's coming through now and looking really good. But looking beyond them, Harry Kane, the nation's leading goalscorer, spent time in the Championship with Leicester and Norwich before his eventual breakthrough at Tottenham. Kyle Walker came through at Sheffield United and was loaned back to Bramall Lane after signing for Tottenham before joining QPR the season after. Harry Maguire and Jared Bowen both spent time at Hull. Jack Grealish was at Aston Villa in the Championship. Conor Gallagher, Ivan Toney, Ezri Konsa, Eberechi Eze, James Maddison was at Norwich. Even somebody like Ben White, whose situation is obviously a bit more complicated now with England, but the same logic still applies. He had a valuable season in the Championship with Leeds, playing under Marcelo Bielsa. Why do you think it's important for these players to have played in the lower leagues? And does that sense of doing your time or learning your trade in different, more hostile environments help to make players more rounded?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's also the element that when you bring players into a Premier League environment straight away, like you're going to be hard pushed to find lots, like an entire squad worth of Phil Foden, Cole Palmer, Marcus Rashfords, particularly in defence. You need to develop that game intelligence, and that only comes from playing games, from playing matches. You can have all of the attributes and the skills from, you know, that you can glean from training, as much as you like. But if it's not, if you don't have that game experience, if you don't have that game intelligence against playing against different types of forwards, against playing against different types of midfielders, you know, like I was talking about earlier, Sam Morsi and Massimo Luongo, you're never going to get those at a Man City academy. But you need to know how to play against them, because you'll come up against the international equivalent of an Ipswich in an international football, for example. You need to know how to beat every type of player. And yeah, I think you desperately need that experience, because you, like I say, you're not going to get an entire squad worth of players who are Premier League ready and ready to go in at the top level immediately. You know, we've even seen with Anthony Gordon, you know, he was very good at Everton, but then took some time to adapt and bed in at Newcastle. Now he's probably one of the better attackers in the Premier League this season. It takes players time to acclimatise, even the best ones. So making sure that you do that acclimation at the Championship or EFL level means that the spotlight isn't as blinding, it's not as bright, and you're less likely to get bombed out by the media because you're not immediately at it. So it really, really does stand players in good stead, I think.
Do you think there's something in the physical aspect of the Championship as well? I know the Premier League is incredibly intense. The football is played at ridiculous speeds nowadays. Every team has squads full of international athletes playing at the highest level. But the longer season, the more intense season in the Championship, do you think that really gives people an edge going into the Premier League in terms of their physicality, and not just in the pure running sense? It's more the battles on the pitch. Sometimes you won't be playing on a pristine grass in North London. Sometimes you won't be playing with guys who like to beat presses with no touch turns and quick 1-2s. Sometimes you're going to take elbows in the face. Sometimes you're going to take a kick. Is that valuable experience as well going into those high level games?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. I think the whole physicality thing about lower league football does get blown out of proportion a little bit, because the general technical level in the EFL is much, much higher than the average fan probably thinks it is. It is lower than the Premier League, and you can see that with the speed of play in an average Championship game, for example. But it's still very, very, very competitive on a technical level. And that's why you see coaches that come in who have a very specific, discernible style of play. They don't always get it right straight away, because, you know, they might be very possession heavy, but out of possession, if they're not drilled, if they're not intelligent tactically, then, you know, you're going to get found out by teams who are just as good or rather have a different style, you know, teams that are willing to hit you on the counter. I do think that the physicality side of things, not even in just a running aspect, does have something to play though. You know, 46 games as opposed to 38 is a lot, especially when the calendar is in a lot of weeks, Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday. It also, particularly for young players as well, I think it helps just get their bodies acclimatized to the top level. Because, you know, even when you think about things from a physiological perspective, you know, things like playing once every 3 or 4 days, it gives your body, it gets your body into a routine of having to recuperate quicker and quicker and quicker. You know, it develops things like your connective tissue is going to have to repair itself to a better degree when you're compared to playing at, you know, PL2 level, when you're not being clattered by a 32-year-old journeyman centre half. You are instead being, you know, tackled by your peers and age mates. And just getting your body up to speed with, you know, how much intensity there is at the higher levels. And that, again, can only stand you in good stead when you go up to the highest level. And especially if you want to become an international player as well. You know, look at the physical condition that the best international players are in. They are playing sometimes they're playing, what, 50, 60, 70 games in a season, or at least in a 12-month span. I'd like to see a player do that who isn't at an elite academy from the age of 10, where you've had the best medical and physio attention from a very young age. I'd like to see them do that without having had at least some grounding in the EFL.
I love those stories, actually, about players who have maybe fallen through the cracks of those elite academies, because it just shows you the margins are ridiculous. You could be cut loose at 11, 13, 15, 16, and it could be such small things, whether it could be an injury, a manager simply not fancying you, you not growing enough in the right amount of time that they would expect. There are so many variables that you have to battle and fight with all the time. But some of the best players now that we like to watch in the Premier League, I mean, even two spring to my mind straight away in Eberechi Eze and Michael Olise, those were guys who had been at the Arsenals and the Chelseas and the Cities, fallen through the gaps. In Olise's case, he got picked up at Reading. In Eze's case, he got picked up by QPR. There are opportunities for players to rebuild themselves in this league with a view to coming back up the leagues. Even Ivan Toney from your beloved Newcastle really fell down to Northampton Town, then went to Peterborough, then went to Brentford, and now he's being linked with moves to Manchester United and Arsenal, and he's been a really good Premier League player. Is there any other story that you've thought about that you can maybe identify with, or players that you've loved to watch who have had something similar happen?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, you know, those types of players. I mean, Ivan Toney is one. I mean, I wouldn't have said when he was at Newcastle that he would be going on to represent England. But again, that's because let's go back to the previous conversation. You know, he hadn't had the experience of playing for Peterborough, Wigan, Northampton. Was he playing for Scunthorpe at one point as well? I can't remember. And then Brentford, you know, he ended up landing at a very upwardly mobile club in Brentford. I mean, James Maddison as well is another one. You know, he, again, didn't come through at an elite academy, you know, came through with Coventry, you know, then went to Norwich. You know, I can't remember who I was speaking to recently, but they were talking about Maddison and how he just wasn't ready for it, then went on loan to Aberdeen, spent, I think he's played around 15 or 16 games there, and then came back and he was ready to be the protagonist. Those sorts of stories do, again, show just how valuable that first team exposure can be at such an early age. I mean, just looking through the England squad, though, I mean, Jordan Pickford, for example, right at the top of that list. As much as I might not be the biggest fan of Jordan Pickford, you have to commend the route that he's taken. That before he became number one at Sunderland, before he became number one for England, he had, I think it was two non-league loans. He then had three or four EFL loans, all of which he played at least 12 times for these six different clubs, and then went on to become, you know, the number one for England. You know, these things don't happen overnight. It's no coincidence. And there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes. You know, there will be players right now who are in the EFL or perhaps even in non-league who we simply don't know anything about or don't know a lot about, who will in 6, 8, 9, 10 years be internationals. And ultimately, the sanctity of the pyramid is that, well, rather it's due to the sanctity of the pyramid, you know, that they have to get this experience somewhere. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding, no better than with the England national team.
Just quickly to finish, we've spoken about many players already on this podcast, but I wanted to chat about two strikers in particular, Ollie Watkins and Viktor Gyökeres. Both have spent time learning their trades in the Championship. Ollie Watkins had three seasons with Brentford. Gyökeres had three seasons with Coventry and even half a season with Swansea before that, and have all of a sudden developed into two of the most productive strikers in Europe. I always thought Ollie Watkins was a good striker, but I've been so impressed with his development over the past 18 months, particularly under Unai Emery. He can score all types of goals. He can run the channels. He can trouble centre-backs physically. He is now proving a capacity to link play and bring others into more dangerous positions. And with 7 games to play in the Premier League, has contributed to more goals than any other player, 18 goals and 10 assists. Viktor Gyökeres, again, somebody who had a really good season with Coventry last campaign, just missed out on promotion with the club. Obviously, they lost in the final. But where has this come from? He's been someone who'd been bouncing around at various clubs, didn't quite make the grade at Brighton, had his loans elsewhere. And he's putting up the most ridiculous scoring and assisting season in Portugal, playing for Sporting Lisbon. Again, who are maybe braver than most to take that gamble from the Championship. They've identified the talent, said he might not be perfect now, but we can mold him into something really promising. Effectively, what I'm trying to get his or explain here is the important lesson is that the development is never linear. Players can develop later, earlier. It's never a straight line. And you should always be aware of talent waiting to be unlocked in the Championship. Brentford have been a really good example of this. Brighton as well. Aston Villa. And there have been some signings recently who I really like and can show that there is value for money there. I think Adam Wharton, who Crystal Palace recently signed from Blackburn, has looked comfortably at the level already and has brought a real technical quality and passing range to their stale midfield. I think of Alex Scott, who joined Bournemouth last summer, had an amazing season at Bristol City. He's had a difficult time with injury, but there have been a few occasions this season when you can really see his quality. We kind of mentioned this and alluded to it before, but should Premier League clubs and even European clubs be more open to signing Championship talent, even though it is in the second tier?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. I think I'd like to see a lot more movement from Championship to Europe's top leagues, not necessarily to the Premier League, because I think that jump can be insurmountable for some players because, you know, for a multitude of reasons, whether it's, you know, moving to a club which doesn't specifically fit them stylistically, or, you know, the margins for error in the Premier League is so minuscule that, you know, and also, you know, fan culture and, you know, the reactionary elements that there can be when, you know, maybe don't have a good start to life at a new club, which, again, let's be honest, is no guarantee. And again, when you're talking about development not being linear, progress at a new club is never linear either. It takes time to bed into a new style or a new manager. I'd like to see more, I'd call them sort of sideways moves from the Championship to, you know, big clubs in the Netherlands, for example, or in Portugal or France, Belgium, those types of moves, you know, to the bigger clubs there, because I think the level is comparable. I think the technical level is very similar. Physically, the Championship's probably got an edge, which probably means that those players would do, you know, proportionately better in those divisions. And it's not, I'm not just talking about the players who, you know, your Victor Gyökeres and the like. I'm talking about players who maybe haven't, you know, set the world alight in the previous Championship campaign, but they've shown enough. They've shown glimpses. Essentially, what I'm calling for is you know, trying to fit round pegs in round holes that might not necessarily be obvious. You know, you might look at someone like Jadon Philogene if you are the sporting director at, I don't know, a French club or a Portuguese club, and think, right, if you're looking at his data, it's very, very comparable to what we want in this exact position. You know, I think about the example of Marcus Edwards from Spurs many years ago, but sort of 5 or 6 years ago, going to Vitória Guimarães, you know, after having a spell in Holland with Excelsior. You know, he's someone who took that leap and ultimately has made a very, very good career on the back of it. He was never going to play for England, like a lot of these Championship players, but he could have gone to the Championship, could have ended up at a Stoke, for example, and just maybe not really ever been considered. I'd like to see that from similar level players if they want to test themselves or clubs to test the Championship a little bit more and say, actually, you know, we found this. And because we know the financial constraints of Championship clubs, we know it's not going to cost ridiculous sums of money to buy this player who's done well, but by no means player of the season well in the previous campaign. I think that there's definite scope to be exploited there if you are a mid-table and above club in those sort of European leagues that I mentioned previously.
Yeah, there will be, and I think it's sensible to do some shopping in the lower leagues, because let's be honest, even though they are the second tier, the talent is increasing season on season. And even now I look at players like Hayden Hackney at Middlesbrough, who I'd be very surprised not to see him move this summer. I think he's been brilliant. Even Jack Clark at Sunderland, who's had to rebuild his career a bit, having left Tottenham. You know, Ethan Ampadu, he kind of left Chelsea through the cracks, wasn't left with much of a fuss, and now he's been really good at Leeds. So there is always talent there to be unlocked and moulded in the right environment. So completely agree with what you've said. And that's just about us to wrap things up. I mean, it's an incredible league. Honestly, I know I've said it a few times, but if you're going to tune in, now is the time to do it, because it gets absolutely crazy. The playoffs are brilliant. The relegation battles are brilliant. And all that's left for me to do now is thank you, Joe, for your time. And it's been a pleasure to chat.
Likewise, Phil, as always, an absolute pleasure to catch up and chat about, yeah, the championship. It is really crazy. And if you haven't been paying too much attention to it this season, then you are coming into it at the right time. It is just, it's going to be mental. And that's even before you get into the playoffs, which is just the Wild West of football. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. But yeah, thanks for having me on, Phil. It's been a real pleasure.
If anyone still uses Twitter, you can find Joe at Joe Donoghue. And as mentioned previously, covering Leeds United for the Yorkshire Evening Post and various other bits for Scouted Football. And that's all for today. Thanks again to Joe for joining me on this episode of the Football Vision podcast. I hope you all enjoyed it and we'll be back next week with another show. Cheers.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.